Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs.
Hi everyone, thanks once again for joining us on Tate Talks. Today we're speaking with Jason Kemsley of Uptime about his career, how he got to where he is, how it all started by taking a chance, and exciting news from Uptime Towers. So hope you enjoy. Hi, Jason. Thanks so much for joining us today on Tate Talks. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm well, Chris. I've been looking forward to this day, so thank you very much for having me.
No, we've been looking forward to having you on. So for those that don't know about yourself, can you sort of tell us something, any fun facts, interesting snippets that you can share with the class?
Oh, fun. I don't know if I would describe fun and me together, typically. I guess a bit of an insight into the type of person. I'm a obsessive character, so I've spent my life doing lots of things for 6 months trying to get really good at them and then moving on. There's only three things that I haven't dropped, and that is my fiance, the business, and possibly my friendship with my business partner Brad. So I hate the word can't, so I love to try and find ways to achieve things, and Brad is equally driven in the same way, which is why this works. But I'm obsessed with trying to achieve or do things that maybe I didn't think I'd be able to achieve when I was younger, or people told me I couldn't. And that includes possibly the most fun thing I think I do, which is fly planes with a little engine on the front.
Wow, well, that is a fun fact. I didn't know you were going to say that. So that's a pretty cool hobby.
It's the one time I think you'll probably be able to understand this. It's the one time in our industry with the speed in which tech changes that I'm thinking about nothing but what I'm doing at that moment. So I can be, 5,000 feet in the air, and I have to be very focused on what's going on, what's around me, keeping vigilant, etc. And so I don't have to think about work. I don't have to think about maybe a staff problem or a customer problem. I'm just focused on the open air. And for me, that calm is, I think, the reason I love it so much. So and that's something I actually strongly encourage my friends and family and anyone I speak to, is try and find that thing where your brain switches off, at least from what you're used to worrying about.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And just one of the other things you mentioned there, obviously, your fiance, we'll come on to the business as we go along, but you mentioned Brad there. And obviously, when we think of you guys at Uptime, it's like a double act with you and Brad. You seem to be at the same events and always doing things and work so well together. But from a sort of organizational point of view, how does that break down? Are you different? Are you the same? Do you sort of complement each other? What's that dynamic look like?
So I guess I'd start by saying my mum very early on said we were the chuckle brothers of the IT industry, which might not be the connotation I want to have, but it's certainly one we still laugh about to the day. We're complementing characters, and I would strongly encourage anyone that's maybe leading on their own to try and find someone to share that pain and struggle with. It can get super lonely at the top, as I'm sure a lot of people listening have been through or seen. Brad is a very heavy operational focused, very one of the smartest men I've ever met. And nothing is too much of a problem. I am slightly the opposite in terms of I always think about what I'm doing or what I'm going to do is going to impact someone. I think about perception a lot. Empathy is something I possibly have too much of. And so we have quite a unique balance where Brad will come up with a really smart idea, possibly, and then I'll work out how do we translate this into a market solution, market product, how will others see it, what will perception be like. And then because I come from the tech background as well, we can fuse the solution together somewhat. So it's super unique, and I feel incredibly grateful to have that. And I think you're absolutely right. We've tried to lean into being present together. I don't think our industry has that sort of dynamic duo that we form. So it's intentional that we've lent into it.
Well, it is. It definitely is something that we all see from the outside. And the Chuckle Brothers reference is amazing, but I'm not sure. I was just trying to note down that I'm not sure how well that translates across the world. Maybe the nearest I can think of, maybe kind of a, and this is talking about the Chuckle Brothers, by the way, not you and Brad, maybe kind of a latter day Laurel and Hardy kind of double act.
Absolutely. I just with the very serious side that makes sure we do exactly what we say we're going to do. I don't want to suggest that everything we do in business is a joke.
No, I didn't think that for a minute, but yeah, I've just got the Chuckle Brothers in my head now. So we need to move on from that part. So can you tell us a little bit about your sort of career background? How did you get into this MSP world that we're working now? What did it look like before that?
So I was, when I was about 2 weeks before my 16th birthday, my mum came home and said, I've just walked past a new Boots pharmacy. Or, you know, it could be a Walmart pharmacy, depending on where you're in the world, a pharmacy effectively. And they've got a store opening and they've got positions, etc. So applied, got in there, was very much a retail worker for 6 months before moving into the pharmacy area and field specifically. So I was training up, considering heading off to university to become a pharmacist. I was at a bit of a crossroads. Kind of felt I'd nailed what I needed for my role there. I was, you know, I'd become sort of the go-to person, or the person that'd always stay late, etc. And I don't, one day I almost had an epiphany, which is I'm not fulfilling my itch. This industry is very static. The same drug that's been around for 40 years is still around and the go-to for certain things. And there wasn't enough of a dynamic environment for me. So I was looking through a local paper and I happened to see a passion of mine was technology. I was a competitive professional gamer in my spare time, weirdly. And I saw a role for an IT position at a small company. Thought I'll go along and have an interview. And would you know it was Brad that I sat down and met, and he laid out the, I'm thinking of doing this. This is where I want to take it. This is what I want to do. And so I maybe in a stupid decision moment decided to quit my very well paid for my age job with security prospects, etc., and told my family that I was going to work with a bloke I'd met once before in his spare bedroom an hour away from my home. And fast forward to today, I've been in the MSP industry ever since. And that was 14 years ago now that I made that jump.
That was a big decision then, I guess, to move from a well-paid job that had great prospects. I mean, if you'd have gone down the pharmacist route, that would have been something that, you know, could have been quite a comfortable job for you if you'd have just stuck with that. But that chance conversation sitting with Brad kind of changed things.
Yeah, I was, where I think going back to when I was sort of 15 sort of time, and I don't want to open up a vulnerable spot too much, but my dad fell disabled. And I think I kind of learned that my biggest life lesson in that moment, which is that constantly pushing forward. You never know what's around the corner. You never know what tomorrow's going to bring. And I remember sat in my bedroom as a young boy, effectively, at the time. I didn't know I was making a good decision, but I knew it felt right. And I knew that it, at worst case scenario, I had my certificates, I could go to another pharmacy in 6 months' time. So yeah, I took a big risk. And at the time, many people in my close circle questioned me and said that's a bit of a silly decision, but I'm incredibly thankful that I did. And I'm well aware there's a huge amount of luck there that is needed, but I'd like to think that we all create a little bit of that luck, right? As I'm sure you and many of the people that have been in the industry for a while would have seen at some point.
Yeah, and the whole life's too short thing, or you don't know what's around the corner, is super powerful. So just embrace it and go for it, which is what you did. But what was the initial conversation with Brad then? What did he say to, what was the big idea that kind of sort of thought, you know what, I want to be part of this?
So we sat in a Costa coffee which is a UK chain of coffee shops. And I recall not really feeling overwhelmed with the moment. I don't know what I was expecting. I'd only ever had one interview in my life. I got the job and it was very corporate interview structure, etc. So the idea of being in this coffee shop and having a coffee and a chat seemed slightly strange to me at first. Brad was coming from a value-added reseller at the time, a box shifter, and had a real desire to create something that put the customer first. And effectively, Uptime Solutions in its inception was a backup company. He created a data center, leased a rack, put some kit in there and backed up websites, created websites, etc. So the conversation was really naive from both of us in that we're a backup company, this is what we're going to do. And at the time, it was more so, hey, I'll support you on your certifications. I'll support you on trying to become the best engineer you want to be. And I'm happy to mentor you along the way. I don't think I asked him what qualified him. I should have actually interrogated him possibly in that moment, given how big of a life decision I was making. But for some reason, it just clicked and worked. And I've since found out there were people that he interviewed that were, you know, significantly more suitable or qualified for what he was looking for at that time. But something in the dynamic, something in the energy between us, it seemed to work. And fast forward 6 to 12 months later than that, came the decision to pivot to be a channel only provider, which is obviously where we sit today. But everything has been organic. Nothing about my story, Brad's story, the company story has been a forced move as such. They've all been organic decisions where we've always just tried to do the best thing for the customer base as a whole. And thankfully, that sort of leads me to being able to be on a podcast with someone like yourself. So there's definitely a good takeaway there that you need to take. Even today, you know, with quite a big headcount now and quite a lot of responsibility and trust that people put in us, you've still got to make the right decision for your customer base. Otherwise, I just don't think you're doing... How can you attend an event? I said this to someone the other day. How can I attend an event like I am next week, shake your hand, have a drink, talk about each other's family, you know, really build strong connections, but know behind the scenes we're intentionally making harmful or wrong decisions?
Well, no, and I'd hopefully hope that no one's doing that. But one of the reasons that I love to do these podcasts is you learn something new. And it just, I didn't know that Uptime began as a kind of a backup organization. I guess the clue's in the name, right? Maybe I should have known that, but I didn't. And I've only ever known you as being kind of an outsourced IT organization, which is focused on the MSP channel. So when did that kind of change happen, when you moved away from backup to starting to add other kind of outsourced IT services?
So it was about 2011-ish. So we had three customers effectively, and they were, if we lose one of these, I've got to leave, or you know, there's a big cost to burden. And the three customers between them effectively made up most of the business. Brad had a conversation with one of the customers, which happened to be someone we still work with to this day, and said, what do we need to do for you to do more work with us? What is it that your customers are looking for? Where can we get to help you? And they effectively said, hey, we would like you to be channel only. We don't like the idea that you can go after our customers direct and you can work with them through us. And very possibly naively, I don't know. It's very difficult in hindsight, but the shift to channel only was made, and so did the beginning of what was a straight to partner service desk projects, etc. model. Consultancy was almost 90% of our business back then. So back then, myself and Brad, both VMware engineers and consultants, would go and do high level projects for IT companies, give them a day rate, they'd mark it up. We would go out and act as them. And that's really easy when there's two of you wearing a different hat, not worrying about if someone's coming in or turning up next day. You know, you're both bought in. It's quite easy. Then you start to try and build that. And that, again, was very organic. It was never intentional. And I would suggest until 2019, neither of us realized what type of opportunity lay ahead should we wish to take it.
Okay, so yeah, later than the thought, but I guess you did take it. And I guess this is probably quite a nice opportunity to learn more about what the organization looks like now, because I know it's completely different. I know that you had some sort of fairly big news last year. So, you know, for those that don't know about Uptime, you know, can you just explain a bit about what you do and sort of what you're aiming to do?
Sure, absolutely. Uptime is, we are now around 150-ish employees in 5 continents. Our service catalog effectively is our 24/7 white labeled help desk service. Really important part is delivered out of US, UK, and New Zealand. So wherever our partners are aligned, they can have a local in-region help desk offering that answers as them and works as them. We've got the NOC team in Sri Lanka that deliver some awesome NOC services to partners, the back-end monitoring, alerts, patch management, etc. We have the projects team, both UK and Sri Lanka. And then we also have our dedicated tech service, which is where an MSP, a partner, a telco can come to us with a particular persona, if you like, that they're after. And we'll present to them, hey, we've got these options available. We look after the culture aspect, the HR aspect. And effectively, that person works with them full time. You obviously touched on one about our super exciting, and I still get shivers a little bit down my spine, sorry, when I think about it. But back in October, we announced the merge of two, I would like to think, household names in the outsourcing space of us, Uptime and Inbay. And it was effectively, it meant we were able to create what I think is really the go-to when it comes to getting technical services or technical assistance for your telco, MSP, whatever that may be. And I believe we have the best offering in the market, whether you want sort of your in-region or out-of-region solutions, whether you have a selection of RMMs, a selection of PSAs, or documentation platforms. We're sort of an agnostic, can plug into each of them and have a range of offerings to suit you. So that happened in September. Fast forward to today, we'll be known as Uptime. Moving forward, that will come in very shortly. If not, it's just come in. Depending on when someone's listening to this, it comes in 1st of March time. So we'll be known as Uptime, and we will be, I hope, the global leader in outsourcing services to technical partners around the world.
Wow. Well, to go back to one of the points you made there, I think you definitely were household names in the outsourced IT region, which is why it was such big news when it happened. I remember reading, you know, it popping up and is this merger between Uptime and Inbay, and it kind of seemed like a great fit. And obviously, it seems to be proving that way going forward. So I'm sure that's going to be a huge success. What I wanted to just touch upon a little is your experience in that time frame then of, you mentioned things like outsourcing, NOC, SOC, service desk, and the kind of employees, I guess. So you can provide employees for MSPs, which is, recruitment's been a constant challenge for MSPs as well. But are you seeing that people are becoming more receptive to that? I mean, MSPs historically, I suppose, in the early days, were probably quite reluctant to want to outsource a lot of that stuff. Maybe they wanted it in-house for quality control purposes, or just for, you know, whatever reason. Are you seeing more and more MSPs open to kind of outsourcing that sort of stuff now?
Absolutely. We were sat in a peer group just a couple of weeks ago, and one of the biggest concerns that someone raised is, hey, there are a new breed of partners coming along, MSPs, and effectively they don't have tech teams. They outsource and they're super agile. They're able to hyper account manage, I would call it. They're able to hyper service customers because they're not trying to be everything to everyone. So there's definitely a steady growth in demand. But I don't think it was always there. We were just too small to be able to massively undo some of the messaging and headlines that had gone out already. So I remember 6-7 years ago, possibly now, there was lots of messaging around your valuation as an MSP is built by the team that you have. And, you know, if you don't have a team, you don't have the same valuation, et cetera. And we've had partners that have been acquired. I can testament to they got valuations that they'd get, whether they had that team internal or not. We're starting to, I think, see now where the industry matures, much like most other service industries have or have been through at some point in history. Actually, there are many different ways to service a customer. And actually, it's about the big goal, the big end vision, sort of the big targets which matter, not the small detail. And that possibly is helped by the fact that we, as professionals, are all maturing as well. I don't know, I won't speak for you, Chris, but I wasn't a businessman 10 years ago or whenever that was. Brad, you know, was an entrepreneur. He'd started something, but I don't know if he'd call himself a businessman we wouldn't have considered ourselves very big professionals, whereas now we're all having to become more professional. We're having to become more mature, you know, talking about proper contracts or compliance, etc. And I think that's just aiding the conversation, aiding us, especially when we are trying to continually push the needle as well in terms of what is possible.
Yeah, it has been really interesting to see how that market has matured and how people are kind of waking up to that. Because I guess the first instance, thinking back with my initial MSP hat on back in the day, we would probably, this is probably before your time, but we would probably have looked at someone like yourselves for 24/7 stuff, I guess, and maybe began with that part. But at the time, we probably wouldn't have thought doing it in hours as well. But I think the capability enhancement, you know, was things you begin to realize that kind of implementation and project engineers are really, really expensive, but you're not doing these projects all of the time. So I guess being able to sort of buy in that capability as and when you need it to deliver projects would have been super valuable for us back in my MSP. And I guess MSPs now are kind of beginning to do that more regularly.
Absolutely. And that was why, our growth going back quite a period was very intentionally, and I don't want to change the topic, but very intentionally, quite a few years ago, me and Brad sat down and said, we can't both be doing everything. We've got to take facets of the business or we've got to portion these out. And so I took sales, marketing, branding, account management, etc., all of that stuff. And outside the business, Brad took ops, HR, finance. And that was very intentional. And so I took that sort of what some MSPs would consider owner-seller hat, where you are the salesperson or you are the person that's bringing in new revenue. That was super important for us at the time because selling wasn't, here's a quote, it was actually trying to open up someone's mind about the possibilities that could exist. It was a really difficult thing for us to set targets. What does the pipeline look like? How long does an opportunity take? For most opportunities, we would get in the door with some sort of knock service because it was back end. And then we'd show them one or two things. And I remember so many calls where the partner's gone, oh, wow. Oh, so I could do that. Yeah, you could. This is what I've been explaining all along. And so it was even to this day, we still have to, you know, really try and encourage or educate what is possible. And I think that's a great thing because it keeps us honest. It keeps us needing to show the value of what we do. But you're absolutely right. Is it wasn't a backup product where we can show you a demo, there's a license attached, and you know, we'll calculate your usage monthly. It was, here's this service, we know this is your core business and you're going to be super nervous. And so from taking them on to looking after them to every single ticket to billing, everything was hyper analyzed compared to any other vendor they worked with.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But I was going to ask a question, made a note here, but you've may just answered that already, which was, you know, you're working with these 150 employees spread across all over the world. How do you handle that from a ops and HR point of view? And I realized the answer was just Brad does that part, right? Because that must be challenging.
Yeah, so we follow the EOS Entrepreneurial Operating System framework internally. That's been a great addition for us in terms of, again, going back to we weren't business people, so to speak. We had to, Brad actually found it, and we had to find frameworks or ways to do things. And so everything was challenged. Why would we do it that way? Why can't we do it this way? And so that worked really well for us. After the announcement and we became one entity, we had to restart that process, remap out what does it look like, etc. But that really is the foundation of everything we do. Our structure, we've got a board, a leadership team, a management team, we've got the relevant framework and structure in place. So touch wood, it's working very effectively, but obviously always with a tweak or an optimization here or there, because we're trying to be as agile as possible and as, I guess, market leading as possible. You've got to continue to push what is the best, if that makes sense. Never satisfied is possibly a good phrase. Is just because someone else does it that way doesn't mean we should do it that way.
Yeah, and I'm hearing more and more about EOS. Actually, I was speaking to a partner the other day that's mentioned it, and I know several partners or friends of mine with MSPs in the UK kind of really swear by EOS. So maybe that's something I need to sort of look into and maybe find out a little bit more about it, because it seems becoming more and more popular.
Absolutely. It's about the accountability for me. Is we know when we're sat in the room, whether it's a leadership meeting or whatever it may be, we know who is accountable for what measurements they have. So some people may do this in their business in another way, shape or form. There's some different frameworks you can use, but we're all on the same vision. We all know where we're going to be in 3 years and 10 years and in a year. We know what we're working on for the quarter. And I think that's something possibly we've all, I don't know if you've been through it, I've been through periods of having it, with the industry rapidly evolving around us, you can get lost a bit in the day-to-day. You can be overwhelmed with the news each week or the advancements or the new shiny tool that's just come onto the market. EOS doesn't allow that. It doesn't allow you to get distracted, because you know where you're heading. And if it doesn't contribute to that, where you're heading or your why, then you don't touch it or you don't spend time on it. So yeah, I'm happy to run you through it if you ever need, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I may well hold you to that, because I've got you give me an idea about something. So yeah, moving on from that then, I guess, because we kind of rattling through the time quite quickly, and we've still got a few questions to pose. So the next one would be, and you've mentioned some of these already, so if maybe a duplication, but what would you say are kind of some of the bigger challenges that MSPs or vendors are facing as we head into the sort of 2024?
So when I started in this industry and the event scene, which was when we first met, there were a very select few vendors. There was only a select audience in the market. And everyone sort of knew everyone. I think we are being overwhelmed with choice. We are being overwhelmed with education, possibly some persuasion in there, or some trying to shift the way your mind sees things. The biggest thing I see being a problem for us all at the moment is that we are being distracted by stuff that doesn't matter. And what I mean by that is, I so often will meet a partner that has you know, just signed up to a product and 4 months later they're shifting to another product, or and they spend so long on their stack or their optimization or their customer that they're actually not driving real benefit and value for both their life and their family, but their customers and their environments as well. So I think the small stuff is really hampering all of us in some way, shape or form. And maybe that is us all maturing and coming out of the weeds. Maybe that is the us finding better events, or maybe that's us finding better sources or resources for information. But as technical people, I still can pick up my phone, read a notification and get lost in a world of news in the industry that quite frankly doesn't drive anywhere near my goal that I'm heading for. So stop sweating the small stuff and focus on what difference you want to make. And if it doesn't directly influence or contribute to that, then stop changing or stop tweaking is what I would say.
Yeah, tweaking is an interesting word, because we're talking, I was chatting up with a friend of ours for the podcast the other week, a mutual friend of ours, Christine Gassman from, who was at Data Partner when I was there. And we're talking about the same things, that we used to go to a lot of events like you do, and you'd know every vendor in the room. I would like pride myself on knowing every vendor or someone that worked at every vendor. If I go to an event now, I probably don't know a third of the vendors or two thirds of the vendors, because they're springing up so quickly. But they've all got something new and shiny that's trying to get the ear of the MSP to say, swap out this product for a very, very similar, but marginally different product. And it is a lot of tinkering. Absolutely. At the edges. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you must have seen it countless times, but I see, hey, this does functionally the same thing as this new one. Let's say it's the same price, but I prefer the GUI. Yeah. Okay, well, I don't know. Let's just pretend you have, I don't know, investment from someone outside. How would you describe, I'm about to spend 2 months of my life doing this and quantifying? Maybe it's because we don't have people to hold us to account or similar. So maybe a good lesson there is to look at maybe the non-exec route or someone as a mentor. But sweating the small stuff is, it's not what your biggest competitor is probably doing, and it's not what the market leaders are currently doing.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. It's not what your competitor's doing. I guess that's what people need to have in their mind at all times when making decisions. And yeah, I like that. That's really useful. Thanks for that. So outside, well, it could be outside, could be inside, doesn't matter. But what else do you do when you're not your day-to-day? Do you listen to books, podcasts? And if so, are they MSP and business focused, or are you more concentrating on sort of TV, Netflix, fiction, novels? What do you do to relax, apart from flying, of course?
So I'm not really a big TV person, sadly, to be honest. The only time I watch TV is on one of the countless plane journeys, but so I catch up on my films then. But I'm a religious gym goer. I have to go to the gym most days for sanity's sake, and also just to keep pushing myself. I'm conscious of the fact I have one body and I want to make it work and last for as long as I can. And I have a series of podcasts and books that I sort of keep going back to. So more personal one, I'm a big fan of a new up-and-coming comedian who's got a podcast called Flagrant. I just like injecting a bit of comedy into my life. There's lots of serious things going on every week, and you know, they are very bad, of course. There's lots of bad, but finding a way to laugh about it or turn it into something a bit more digestible is something I do a lot of. And then, yeah, a lot of the rest of it is business based. So I'll typically hover around, very much similar to what I was saying about my obsessive personality when I was younger. I would do something for 6 months and then move on to the next thing. I do that with podcasts as well. So high performance podcasts, I was listening to for a little while. That was very good. I'm particularly into one that I would highly recommend for anyone listening, because it's out of the blue. It's not a conventional, which is called PBD, Papa Bravo Delta podcast, and it's by a guy called Patrick Bet-David, who I've read a few of his books recently. He's a he's an entrepreneur that sort of sold an insurance company in the US for hundreds of millions, and is, you know, sort of everything you think an entrepreneur should be, in many different ways, but just doesn't beat around the bush with what he's trying to teach or what his messaging is, just hones in on it. And the last book I read, which I think is one that we were just discussing there with competitors, is called Choose Your Enemies Wisely. And it's around the concept that lots of things in life motivate you, but nothing motivates you more than trying to do better or do more than your enemy. And your enemy doesn't have to be someone you hate. Your enemy can be a competitor, or it can be a team, or whatever it may be. And using that as your fuel to be the best version of yourself. And so, you know, even if you've got a competitor locally, don't hate them, don't be malicious, but use them to drive you, fuel you. We had it coming up. We had a, I won't mention them, but a large player in the field. And we would look at them and that's where we can be better than them. This is where we can be better than them. We don't have the resources they do, but we're going to put in more work than they are. And we'd constantly use it to drive us. So, yeah, Patrick Bet-David podcast is the other thing, all while working out in the gym or sleeping or working.
Yeah, well, there's some great ones that I've not heard of those. I'll definitely check those out. And I'll put links into the description if anyone else wants to have a listen. I'm sure they're great. So, yeah, I'll do that and look forward to hearing them. So a couple of quick questions to go, because we're almost, well, we're actually out of time already, but we'll keep
going. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. So the next one is, obviously you got into the MSP space through a sort of a conversation that you had with Brad. But I mean, if you were offering advice to someone wanting to get into the MSP space now, what would you say to them?
Be different. Be different. I think the simplest way to achieve what you want in life is to go and find someone that's done it before, learn about them, study them, see how they achieved it, and then find a way of replicating. And so to work in the MSP space, I would find a way to communicate or touch bases with someone in the industry. I'd offer to work for free for a few weeks to understand that industry. You've got to be hungry, right? But I would, right now, if I was starting in the space, I would go to one of, and I was going into the MSP, I would find one of the household names in the space that I consider to be sort of up there. I'd offer to go and work there for free for a couple of weeks. Please, can I just come and witness, sit by you, whatever that may be. I just want to absorb information. I just want to be the right person for where I'm going to be positioned in future. And then the biggest problem we typically see is people think they are much higher than they actually are when it comes to applying for roles, looking for roles, etc. So be humble and just understand that you're never the finished product. None of us are. So don't go in aiming for the stars, because you're always going to be disappointed, sadly. We're an industry that's trying to find our feet, and we're trying to work out where we sit for the long term, in some different ways with AI, etc., all coming up. So find, if you're trying to get in the MSP space, find someone local, study them, learn them, go and offer to do something for free or just be around them, and you'll pick up all the things you need to be able to get into the space for the long term.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And I think the be humble thing is a really big tip as well. So just, you know, I think that's great advice for anyone starting up or, you know, going up the career ladder at any time. So yeah, that's fantastic.
I read a story the other day about a successful CEO that said I should interact with everyone as if they can teach me something. And he met with a fan who wanted to meet him. And it turned out 20 years later, that fan actually became the CEO of the company he was stepping away from. And so it just goes to show you, it doesn't matter who you meet, right? We can all learn something. We've had many of sober conversations, Chris, where I've learned things from you, or, and we've got to, if our eyes aren't open to that, then maybe we don't see it as clearly. So yeah, we can always learn and improve.
Yeah, and that's one of the common things that comes across on this podcast, which, you know, and I'm speaking with successful people. I'm very much aware of that. But that is one of that is kind of a common theme that people are saying that they are having these conversations in the way that you had that initial conversation with Brad and sat down and were open to making that move into the unknown almost, and it's paid off. But I've spoken to so many people that have been really successful that have at some point taken the plunge, moved out of their comfort zone, and just by just having to spoken to someone that's inspired them to do something different. So, and I guess that's paying it forward now in terms of, you know, if someone comes to speak to you, I know that you'll give them sort of fantastic advice, as you are here, so, which is a great part of this MSP community as well. So yeah, that's good. That's a great tip. And onto the very final question then, which, and you've already given us lots of tips, so I feel a little bit guilty asking for another one, but we're speaking to MSPs here generally on this podcast, and you speak to a lot of MSPs day in, day out within your own portfolio, and also when you're at events, stood at booths, and you must learn what works and what doesn't work for MSPs. So if you were speaking to an MSP now and they said, Jason, can you tell us what we should be doing in our business to sort of give us an edge into 2024? What would you say to them?
Oh, I don't want to use a typical one. I would do three things. If I was to start an MSP tomorrow, which I'm not, if there's any partners listening and stuff, I'm very devoted to this channel only. If I was starting an MSP tomorrow, if I was to tell someone, I would pick your vertical. I would base every single part of my business around that vertical. Messaging, type of people that we employ, the way my documents look, the way my processes look, the way my processes act, knowing that vertical. And then I would attend every single marketing or event around that vertical and offer my time free of charge to anyone and everyone to try and become known as a thought leader in, let's pick accountancy. I'd go to every accountancy event I could in this country, maybe outside the country. I would offer my time, I'd offer guest blogs, content, and I would be cybersecurity advice for accountants 2024, or the future of accountancy with technology. And I would invest so much time into valuable, deliverable content that at some point someone has to start using it. And all I'd ask for is share my name with my company underneath. And I'd rinse and repeat. I think many people have said this before, and I'll say it. I was talking about sweating the small stuff. The operations, even if you don't outsource, the operations will come. If you don't have a flowing sales model and vision, the rest is all misdirected. So find your place, get into it, and base everything around it, and just keep flowing around in a continuous circle.
Pick your vertical. I guess that's the thing. A lot of MSPs do that, but then they probably don't follow what you were saying, which is kind of get fully immersed in the world of that vertical and keep going, and the success will come. So that's a fantastic piece of advice, and really appreciate you sharing that with us. I'm sure that's going to help people. And with that, we're at time. So thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us today. I'll put all of your details in the description below. So if anyone wants to know more about outsourcing, uptime, EOS, flying planes, or whatever it is, I'm sure they'll contact you. And it's been great to speak to you, and hope to speak to you soon.
No, thank you very much, Chris. And on behalf of everyone listening, I enjoy these. Thanks for continuing to do them.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Well, thanks once again, Jason, for joining us. I really enjoyed chatting. Hope you all did too. If you did, please like, subscribe, comment, share, do whatever you need to do to help spread the word of Tate Talks. But until next time, goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs. Jump Cloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud native, and vendor agnostic. Using Jump Cloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.